listen to Big Blue Kick. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you, 201-939-4513, or on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll keep an eye on that as well. And the Giants mobile app, you'll see some interactive features coming your way for the first time ever on today's show. Obviously, Lance and Carl on yesterday. They covered a lot of the angles of the game. I want to give you a couple of angles that I took a look at as the Giants took on the Saints. And I think general themes, Lance, as to why this team is 2-0 when probably last year they wouldn't have been 2-0 are multifaceted. Obviously, the defense is a lot better. You guys touched on that yesterday. I don't want to rehash that. It's pretty obvious. Even the most rudimentary eye can see how much better this defensive unit is and, frankly, the talent on this defensive unit is than last season. But the thing that jumps out to me, and I wrote about this in the Cover 3 article that me, you, and Dan Salamone do every Monday that came out yesterday. To me, the difference with the Giants comes down to one number. In the NFL, there's no statistic more important than turnover ratio.
Oh, yeah.
It more often than not determines who wins football games. It was the one thing when Tom Coughlin sat down, had his meeting with his team every Wednesday, he put up the numbers and say, teams that turn it over more than twice have a winning percentage of 30%. The teams that don't turn it over win 90% of their games. That's how you win football games. Well, the Giants have bucked that trend so far this year. They are minus 4 in turnover ratio. Before last night's game, I didn't take a look to see if Chicago went below them in that. But the Giants were minus 4 heading into last night's game. The only team worse than them were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at minus 6. Yet the Giants are still 2-0. The one turnover they had against the Cowboys yielded an Ezekiel Elliott touchdown. But the three turnovers on consecutive possessions in the same quarter against the Saints yielded one field goal attempt that turned into a block and 7 points for the New York Football Giants. If you can survive a minus 4 over two games and come out 2-0, that means there's a darn good chance you have a pretty good team on your hands.
Yeah, and it's all because of the defense, as you alluded to, John. I mean, I'll throw out another stat to further aid what you just laid out. After those three fumbles in the Saints game, the Saints ran a total of 14 plays on those three possessions.
They were three first downs, I think, or only two first downs?
Well, there were
either.
Barely any because they were so plagued by penalties. Also, keep in mind, that backed them up. But the 14 plays yielded just a total of 26 yards.
Yeah, off that first fumble by Vereen, the Saints got one first down. Then you had the Victor Cruz fumble on the deep pass. The Saints got one first down. Both those possessions were just six plays before the punt.
Yep.
And then on the blocked field goal, the Saints, again, did not get a first down at all because of the offensive pass interference penalty, which I didn't think was a good call, by the way. I think the Giants caught a break on that one. But, again, you're right. Only two first downs on those two possessions.
Yeah, so that's why the 14 plays only yielded 26 yards.
Yep.
And if you're only going to get 26 yards on 14 plays, you do the math, and that's including the penalties. Clearly, you're not going to get in field position where you could at least attempt a field goal. So that was key. By the Saints shooting themselves in the feet, but also the fact that the Giants' defense held them in short yardage situations and they weren't able to put points on the board. So, I mean, you could have the turnover differential in the minus, John, which the Giants do have right now, but the whole point is limiting the opponents from capitalizing on those mistakes, and that hasn't transpired yet, especially in this last game with the Saints.
And again, two of those four turnovers were in Giants' territory. The Cowboys scored on the one. The Saints failed on the field goal on the other. And one other note on that, and I want to go back to last year, Lance, because this was a point that me and you made over and over. I know Giant fans kind of got annoyed at it because we were kind of foretelling that things might go south later in the year. It was about week 6 or week 7. There was no way for me to go out to see what the turnover ratios were week to week last year. I know you probably have it in your
document. I can bring it up, yeah.
It was either in week 6, 7, or 8, and the Giants were number 1 in the NFL in turnover ratio. They were plus 18. That number I remember. And we were sitting here, and I think the Giants at that point were, you know, 3-3 or 3-4 or something like that. And we tried to explain to Giant fans that, look, one of the reasons the Giants' record is what it is because of their huge advantage in the turnover ratio. And as much as, you know, protecting the football and, you know, aggressive play on defense and forcing takeaways helps, a lot of turnovers and takeaways is chance and luck. Other teams making mistakes that you really don't have much of an impact on. It's just the facts. That's how it works. This year, it's the opposite. So last season, we said they had the huge plus. Eventually, that's going to normalize, and the Giants are going to turn it over more, take it away less, and the Giants are going to lose more games. Guess what happened?
It did.
Exactly
it
that.
Like that. Yeah.
And the Giants, I think they finished a year around plus 6 or plus 7.
Plus 7 they
finished. So in the last half of the year, they were minus 10, and they didn't win a whole lot of games. Why? Because you're minus 10. So this year, if you're still winning when you're minus 4, assuming that number is going to eventually normalize back to a mean, that means that you're going to have the advantage of that turnover ratio moving forward, plus your talent, which means I still think the trajectory is pointing up for this Giants team. Once the defense starts taking the ball away, which you figure with this talent, Lance, is going to start to happen eventually.
Which means you'd get the plus in the turnover differential.
Correct.
So the things will balance out. I mean, if you look at last season, they had 28 takeaways last season, but they only had 5 takeaways in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games. So 5 takeaways in the last 6 games, that means 23 of your 28 takeaways came in the early stages of your season, and the final 6, when it ultimately decided the outcome of the NFC East, you know, the tipping of the scales was not necessarily in the Giants' favor. And at the same time, while I said just 5 takeaways in the last 6 games, look at the turnovers increase all of a sudden in those final 6 games as well, where they were averaging at least 1 turnover per contest. And then against the Panthers and the Vikings, 2 of the final 3 games, they combined for 5 turnovers in that contest. So that's why all of a sudden it dipped into the minus, and that usually is synonymous with losses. Whereas it's unique, the first 2 games this year, they're in the minus, but they've overcome that because the opposition is not capitalizing and getting in the end zone. That's been the biggest difference maker. I mean, look at last season, John. If you take into consideration the first 2 games against the Cowboys and the Falcons, and I'll look at the Falcons game. Atlanta won a close game. Julio Jones had that long catch on Prince Amukamara, and then they punched it in with a run play. Eli Manning fumbled the ball when the Giants were in the red zone. Atlanta scores off of that turnover. That doesn't happen in the Saints game. That's how you close out a close matter.
And the Falcons didn't have a turnover in that game last year either, and those little plays here and there really can make the difference. I mean, you go back to this Giants and Saints game, you take a look at it, and these little plays, whether it was Larry Donnell not holding on to the ball in the end zone, Beckham not holding on to the ball in the back of the end zone, or, say, Janoris Jenkins not holding on to the interception near the sideline, those plays can make a big difference because, you know, they turn at the points, and that can make a huge difference. 201-939-4513. If you're on the Giants mobile app, you can check out our first poll question on the bottom of the screen. And we already erased the question off the screen here, Matt. What was the first question that we had on the
Giants defensive MVP?
Who was the Giants defensive MVP against the Saints? Landon Collins or Janoris Jenkins? Make sure you go to your mobile app and place your vote for who you think is going to win. Who was the most important player to the Giants' defense against the Saints. 201-939-4513. Thank you for joining us on Twitter, by the way. You'll watch the rest of the show on Giants.com. Let's do it. Let's get to the calls, Lance.
Absolutely.
Might as well early and often.
Yep.
The phones are off the hooks before we start the show. Let's get as many people in today as we can. We'll start in Jersey and say hi to Jersey Chris. What's going on, Jersey Chris?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How are you, pal?
What a great game. I'm happy with 2-0.
Yes, sir.
John and Lance, you always do a great job. Here's my big thing. I'm looking at these fumbles. Cruz got blindsided, right? But he has to know he's coming upon a tackle. He's got to protect the ball. Farina's in the middle of the line. His hands are wide open before he's even hit. He's got to protect the ball. You know, the Duke, which we all call it, needs to be protected better. And they do these drills, and I don't get it, okay, on the fumbles. Now, we all know, this is the commentary, guys. Eli Manning has been doing this for years. We all know this. He's been doing this for years. He's got to control the ball better, okay? On our offensive line, I'm going to go off the air. Will Beatty or Hart, I don't think Newhouse might not make it this week, but I'd like to see Beatty in there. You think he's ready? You think he's ready? And I think Jenkins and Hankins and Collins were all MVPs in the game, in my opinion, on defense. I'll let it go. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, I appreciate the call.
Appreciate the phone call.
I think Eli does a pretty good job protecting the ball when he gets hit. He's not one of these quarterbacks, in my opinion at least, that when he gets hit, he often loses the ball. I think he does a pretty good job protecting it. I agree on the Victor Cruz play. When he got hit, he had the ball down by his hip away from his body. That's football 101 stuff. Yep. You can't hold the ball down there. That's how you lose it. And I thought Kenny Vaccaro, frankly, just made a pretty good play in Vereen. I didn't think he was that fast and loose with the ball. I think Kenny Vaccaro just made a good play on
that. Well, Vereen, if you look at the numbers, he's been very careful with the football over the course of his career. It was his first fumble since 2013, John, and it was the first fumble he lost since 2012. So it's very rare that Vereen puts the football on the ground. I think you got to tip your cap to the defense. You know, Victor Cruz is the one maybe of the three you put under the microscope. And remember, the Eli Manning fumble came after he took pressure on back-to-back plays because of breakdowns on both the left side and the right side in terms of the tackles. As far as Chris's point about if Marshall Newhouse doesn't play this week, who may fill in? Now, I would think Bobby Hart's the first man up, not necessarily Will Beatty. Remember, Will Beatty's been inactive for the first two games. He's still obviously getting back into the thick of things, but I think based on what we saw with the coaching decision, I think Hart's the first man up, and I think Beatty needs to show perhaps a little bit more in practice before he jumps ahead of him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll know more maybe today when we have media avails at 3:45, more likely I would say when Ben McAdoo addresses the media for the first time tomorrow. I guess that's going to be around 1:35 after the practice. We'll have a better idea of what Marshall Newhouse's injury situation is with that calf. Who knows? We'll see. But again, you're right. You got to think right now it's going to be Bobby Hart based on the fact that Will Beatty hasn't been active yet, but maybe Beatty's now where he needs to be physically. So we'll tell based on who's practicing and on the field.
Well, and you figure if Newhouse isn't suiting up, then Beatty would be in line, you would think, to get a uniform this weekend, unless obviously they make some type of a roster move.
But Jersey Chris's larger point about protecting the ball, yes, you can't have all these fumbles. And the thing that you don't like is that you saw it in the preseason too. This is something new. They had turnover issues in the preseason too. So this is something that has to get cleaned up if this Giant team wants to win the NFC East, which, by the way, after this weekend, Eagles now 2-0, Cowboys beat the Redskins 1-1, Redskins now must-win game against the Giants next week. So NFC East, I don't know. We'll see how tough it's going to be. Two rookie quarterbacks, you always have questions about that. But that Eagle defense looked like it was for real last night.
Well, that was a big storyline this season about Jim Schwartz coming in as the defensive coordinator, John. And I said to a lot of people, both on and off the air,
me too,
you know, people were looking at the personnel and saying, oh, well, you know, they have issues. But Jim Schwartz has a track record of turning defenses around. He did it in Buffalo in 14. They led the NFL in sacks. He did it in Tennessee. It's partially the coordinator and whether or not he's putting the players in the right position to succeed, and he's certainly been able to do a good job in the first two games. You also touched on the rookie quarterback narrative, which was another big theme entering this season, and there's probably going to be ups and downs with both Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz. It's a small sample size, but first two games, both quarterbacks have done one thing that the Giants haven't done. And that is protect the football.
Zero interceptions or fumbles by either quarterback.
And for a rookie quarterback to do that over the course of four games, because two for Prescott, two for Wentz, that's impressive. That's not something you can bank on.
I saw it. I think it was ESPN.com at the stat this morning. It's a record for both those quarterbacks. So Prescott with 75 career NFL passes without an interception is a record. And then Wentz is 71
right behind him
with no interceptions. So if Prescott didn't have the record, Wentz would have the record. So,
correct, which is amazing. And then the other thing is,
and by the way, great job by those coaching staffs, too, getting those two quarterbacks ready to play.
Yeah.
Both those guys were number three on the depth chart when they showed up and were in the offseason program back in June. For them to both be starting now and giving their teams a chance to win, that's all you can ask.
Well, and remember, Wentz missed the majority of the preseason and training camp with the rib injury, too, so that makes it even more impressive. But, you know, here's another interesting nugget in terms of the disparity between Jared Goff in L.A. and Wentz in Philadelphia. Now, you know, it's all about opportunity and whether or not the coaching staff thinks you're ready, but notice who Wentz is surrounded by, John. He's surrounded by a bunch of former quarterbacks who have played in the NFL. Doug Peterson is his head coach, and then Frank Reich is his offensive coordinator who made a name for himself in Buffalo, filling in for Jim Kelly in the postseason.
And I think his quarterback coach is a former quarterback, correct, too, right?
So
I can't remember who it is.
D. Filippelli, I think,
if I'm correct.
I may be butchering the name, but it's three quarterbacks, and Filippelli had a tenure in college as a quarterback. So you take all that into consideration, you have a lot of individuals who have worked with quarterbacks, who have groomed quarterbacks. It's no surprise that that's worked out well thus far through two games, whereas look at LA's coaching staff is mostly defensive-minded, and Jeff Fisher's a special teams guy when he was with the Chicago Bears, that 85 team. So that certainly plays a role in terms of the voices that are in the ears of these young players.
201-939-4513. And the other thing, too, you're talking about being surrounded by coaches. The players Carson Wentz is surrounded by an offense in Philadelphia, a little bit better than the players that surround the quarterback position in Los Angeles. With a leaky offensive line, receivers that have trouble catching the ball, Todd Gurley obviously is excellent, but other than that, the Rams' offensive personnel have some issues.
So with that being said, Philadelphia's receivers have trouble holding on to the football, too.
They do.
Which was well documented last night.
But at least they get open.
That's true. They do. Separation's not a problem. He just needs them to catch the ball.
201-939-4513. EJ in Florida, he's up next. EJ, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to say, if there was ever going to be a perfect time for three turnovers, it was this game, because it shows how resilient this team is. To have three turnovers against, I don't care who their DBs are, it really don't matter to me. As long as number nine is playing quarterback for the Saints, and his name is Drew Brees, and you can make sure that they don't really capitalize on those three turnovers, man, that's a lot. That's a lot of good right there. The one thing that really stood out to me the most was, like, if you look at the past two Super Bowl winning teams, you know, 07 and 2011, it wasn't really teams that were going to blow you out. It was a team that was going to have a hard fight with you, pull teeth with you, but at the end of the day, we were going to pull the last tooth. And they just hung in there. And as a Giant fan, that was a pretty good showing about what they did on Sunday.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. And they're winning games, Lance, that they would have lost last year.
And that's why I showed what happened in the first two games last season versus what happened in the first two games this season, the defense being able to prevent issues from happening after you turn the ball over. But, yeah, the defense deserves a lot of credit over these first two games, as EJ alluded to on the phone lines here. And, you know, I mean, that's encouraging. It's something you can build upon.
Appreciate it.
The fact that your defense is going to go out there and limit two opponents here in 2 weeks, John, to less than 20 points. I mean, that's a nice trend going so far.
And what I like even more about it, Lance, you're absolutely right. They stopped two different kinds of offenses in different ways. They stopped a team with a rookie quarterback, with an excellent rookie running back, and a fantastic offensive line that wanted to pound the football. So what did the Giants do? They shut down the running attack. The next week, you're taking on a Hall of Famer, a quarterback in Drew Brees, with a bunch of weapons and wide receivers, spread the field, throw the ball all over the place. What happens? They slow down that passing attack. So we saw the run defense. We even saw some pass rush. We saw some coverage in the secondary. We saw the Giants linebackers and safety shut down Kobe Fleener. The Saints running backs were quiet in the passing game as well. Good job by the linebackers there. So we're seeing this defense on every level make some plays in the first 2 weeks, which is very encouraging.
Yeah, they're well-disciplined on every level. I think that's well said. I would also throw in, we've also seen the secondary blitz a little and provide pressure on the quarterback.
Two sacks.
Correct, with Leon Hall and Landon Collins.
I thought JPP was going to get a half sack on that one.
It was close. In the vicinity. And he's eventually going to break out, you figure.
He has
he's
four quarterback hits.
Well, that's the key. That's probably more important than necessarily how many sacks. Same thing with Vernon, too. They're getting pressure. That's all that matters. And I think Spags even laid that out before the Saints game when he spoke to the media last week. John, if you recall, they were pressing on him. Oh, well, you know, you didn't see the sacks against the Cowboys. But he said, no, we saw the quarterback hits. And those are the numbers that we statistically are more aware of, because that means we're in the right position. We're applying pressure on a consistent basis. So that is encouraging as well. But the fact that they're not giving up the big plays, that speaks volumes about the discipline. Two plays of 20 or more yards that the Saints had against the Giants. And even if you go back to the Dallas game too, John, everything was underneath. Cole Beasley and Jason Witten, nothing was deep down the field with Dez Bryant for the most part.
And teams have taken shots, but whether it's Eli Apple or Landon Collins or Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie or Janoris Jenkins, even if these opponents are getting their hands on the football, the Giants' corners and safeties and defensive backs are getting their hands in there and
batting,
dislodging the football and just disrupting them, forcing them out of bounds, whatever the case might be. Even if there is a small window, they do a good job of, you know, shutting that down and not letting them catch the pass.
Well, we've been talking about finishing the game. Well, how do you finish the game? You finish the play. And they're finishing the individual plays. And the perfect example of what you just mentioned, John, is Landon Collins on Dez Bryant in the end zone. And Dez, he's fighting for the ball, but Landon stays with it all the way to the ground. Dez briefly loses control of the ball, and by him losing control, he didn't gain control back until he was out of play. So that extra effort play, hey, that's the difference between winning and losing a game by a point.
All right, I'm going to let our caller on line two skip the line since he's all the way out in Europe and go to Jacob in Denmark, another Denmark caller. What's up, Jacob? How are you?
No. This is Jason. He got my name wrong.
Oh, that's all right, Jason. What's up?
How you doing today?
Doing all right, pal.
Hey, so I did a little tally, and through two games, we got nine teams that are 32 points between the two games or less. Out of those nine teams, we play five of them. Out of those five, we play four at their house. We play one in London. So, that being said...
That have scored less than 32 points or given up less than 32 points, Jason?
Given up less than 32 points.
Okay, got it.
So, basically, some serious defense going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, and we're talking about the Ravens, Green Bay, Vikings, Rams, and Steelers.
Okay.
So, all pretty good teams. So, worst case scenario, even if we lose all those five games plus one division game, that puts us at 10 wins and 6. Worst-case scenario. So what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you're assuming you're going 6-0 in the NFC East in that calculation. And you know what? I think the Giants will do well against the NFCs this year, but 6-0, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, especially after last night's game, you know, the Eagles kind of really, really surprised me.
Well, and these teams tend to beat each other up in the division, too.
Hey, look, and it was Dak Prescott's first game as a rookie, and the Giants beat him by only a point. Same for Ezekiel Elliott's first game. Any game against the Cowboys is going to be close. You know how games against the Eagles go. And this week, the Redskins are a really desperate team. And really, the most important games are always the division games. And Lance, we've said it a million times. If you want to win the division, what do you have to go in the division?
You got to win at least four games.
Got to win at least four games if you want to win the division. So before you talk about, you know, Jason, all those opponents and the points they've given up outside of the division, worry about beating the Cowboys, Eagles, and Redskins four times, and then you go from there.
Well, and plus the other thing that I throw out there, Jason, there's not a lot of sample size-wise for all of these games. I mean, I give you credit for the mathematics that you're putting out there, but, you know, who knows what some of these opponents are going to look like 4 or 5 weeks down the line, injuries and everything else
and
that you have to take into consideration.
And who knows who those teams play in the first 2 weeks either. Those points might have a lot to do with their opponents.
How challenging the opposition
was. That's true. That's
Finish
true.
Up, Jason. What
hey,
else you got?
Could I ask a solidifier one question?
Yeah.
Because how you grade the offense this week, Lance? Because I know John don't want to give me a grade. He told me last week he's not going to grade it.
Well, no. You asked for a grade on the tally. No, Jason, you asked for a grade on the offensive line. I'm not giving you an
offensive line
grade. You want an offensive line grade or an offensive grade?
Offensive line.
Well, I mean, the offensive line, I think if you compare it to what happened in the Dallas game, I mean, I'm not big on grades to begin with, but I think it's apparent that there was somewhat of a little bit of a drop-off compared to how they produced against Dallas, specifically when you look at the running numbers, Jason.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's well documented.
Right, right.
They ran the ball for, you know, a little over 2 yards per carry this past week when they were far more productive in the game against the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, and the Saints also got to Eli Manning a lot more than the Cowboys did. So, Jason, I don't think there's any doubt, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it that the Giants' offensive line played a lot better in week one than they did in week two.
Well, and this also goes back to a conversation that Carl and I had after the Dallas Cowboys game, and, you know, everybody was getting excited about the offensive line, which is understandable, but it's all about you have to see the first four games, John, I always say. Give me a quarter of the season before we start to say, okay, this is a significant need, this is an issue, and therefore, so right now you've had running games over two games, John, where you've had the first game, closed out the game very strongly, a bright spot. Second game fell off a little bit. Hey, the offense did enough in the passing game, but you have mixed results after two games. I don't think that's enough to say, hey, they can be this type of identity moving forward.
Yeah, I know Carl said this on WFN. I'm not sure if he said it on the show with you yesterday, but this offensive line in the running game is going to be a week-to-week type of scenario. It's not going to be, you know, where you have, you know, Adrian Peterson or, you know, Gurley or, you know, the Cowboys with their offensive line or even the Titans with their power running game the way they're doing it now, where you're going to be, you know, 120 yards every week. This is kind of going to be a week-to-week opponent scheme type of deal that's going to determine how this team runs the ball every week.
Well, and that's why this is probably the most encouraging aspect after the first two games, John, which we've laid out. You have much more balance on this team this year after two games. What I mean by that is you can win games with your offense, you can win games with your defense, and maybe you could get an X play here or there from your special teams.
Right.
So if that's the case, then if you don't have consistency on the ground, nobody's saying they need to run for 120 yards per game. You'd like to. You'd like to get good yardage per carry, but the point is, if the defense has vastly improved, then you can get away with games where maybe the running game is not necessarily setting the tone. And good teams, I always say, they find a variety of ways to win. So far over these two games, the Giants have found different ways to win. They can keep that up. I mean, that's going to be something that they can easily turn to.
Yeah, and very quickly on the running game as well, and I said this on Bob Papa's PapaCast, which will be going up on WFAN.com later on today. He also talked to Landon Collins on that. I'm not as concerned with the yards per carry, and it's important. Don't get me wrong. It matters. But I want to see this team run well situationally, and here's what I mean.
Yeah.
On a third and one, I want them to be able to run it in. I want to run for a first down. The first week, we saw them run for a first down on a third and two. When's the last time we saw the Giants do that? I want to see this team when it's inside the five-yard line, being able to punch the ball into the end zone. I don't want to see a minus two, a minus three-yard run on a first down to put you in a second and 12, second and 13 hole. That's bad. You got to run better situationally. So even if the numbers at the end of the day might not look great, you know that in key situations and important spots, the run got you where you needed to go.
Well, and I think you could turn to the Saints game, John, what you're talking about. I forget when in the game it was, but they were right on the one, like you said, and they ran Shane Vereen on two consecutive plays, and he was stopped.
And I was surprised Jennings wasn't in for those plays, by the way. But maybe I had to
remember the hand injury. Right. At least that's what Ben McAdoo alluded to, and that's going to be an injury to watch, obviously, starting on Wednesday when Ben McAdoo speaks to the media. But
here we go,
when they tried to go up the middle with Vereen, they were unsuccessful.
Fourth quarter, 10-12 to play, first and goal at the one. Vereen, no gain. And then the pass that got deflected to Victor Cruz, where it looked like Cruz got held, too, before the pass was thrown.
So those are the types of things you want to be able to run, no matter who the personnel is, and push it through for 1 yard. I mean, that's where clearly they want to improve on the ground.
And you know what? Real funny, real quick, guys, and I'll get back to your calls, I promise you. I was curious when we got into games this year if we were going to see Eli Manning run a quarterback sneak. I'm serious. I was figuring, was that a Tom Coughlin thing? Was that, you know, did Ben McAdoo adopt that? You know, would he run a quarterback sneak? You know, they might still do it, but we haven't seen it yet.
No, we haven't. I'd be very surprised if we do see it. I think that they feel confident that they have running back personnel that should be able to punch it in.
Yeah, even so, from 1 year so no, with true. Good running backs, they'll still sneak it.
Tom Brady does it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably the king of doing that. And Aaron Rodgers, we've seen it do a lot. But, you know, I mean, I think there's a difference in terms of at least Rodgers, for example, a far more mobile quarterback than compared to what Eli brings to the table.
All right, our next question is up on the Giants mobile app. If you're watching or listening that way, if you're not, go to your Giants app on your phone and check it out. How many catches do you think Odell Beckham Jr. will have this week? Will it be less than seven? Will it be more than seven? Place your vote on the Giants mobile app, and Matt will give you the results after some of them start pouring in, and we'll see what you guys think. And obviously a big story this week coming up, Lance, is how the Redskins, and I was tired of hearing about it before week two, so I'm sure I'm going to be tired about hearing about it by about 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, is how the Redskins going to deploy their cornerbacks in terms of, you know, covering the opponent. I have not had a chance yet this afternoon. My intention is to go back and watch that Redskin-Cowboy game to see exactly how they deployed their secondary. But from what I understand, they had Breland on Des Bryant an awful lot in that game. So my guess is that they're just going to have Josh Norman play aside. Whomever's there, he's going to cover. And quite frankly, given how good all three Giants receivers are, it seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, Norman didn't follow Dez until late in the second half.
Okay.
That's when they finally made the switch over to Dez.
Did Breland follow
before
Dez?
That, well, Breland was mainly on the side where Dez was lined up.
So he didn't follow him. That's just where he was.
No, but Norman followed him in the second half.
He
meaning
did.
When Dez was moved around, then Norman went
he
with
did.
Him. But he
okay.
didn't do it until the second half.
Got it.
Late in the game, when the game was obviously close and highly contested. Before that, it was Norman on his side. And, yeah, the Giants pose a challenge because if you want to now all of a sudden put your attention to Odell or Cruz, then you have to worry worry about two of the other three wide receivers. So I would assume that, you know, they may pick a side with Norman and the Giants will move wide receivers around. But no matter whether you have a shutdown corner on your team or not, I mean, this goes to hold true with the Giants, you need other personnel to do their job. So the Redskins, whether Norman locks down his side, Breland still needs to come to play every single down.
And remember what the Patriots is to do with Darrelle Revis, and I actually favor that strategy myself. If I was a defensive coordinator, thank goodness I'm not. I like putting your best corner on the other team's second-best wide receiver and then double-teaming the other team's best wide receiver. So what do? You take away one side of the field completely. Because you say, look, for example, with the Patriots, let's say the Patriots were playing the Miami Dolphins, all right, and they had Darrelle Revis. You know he's going to be able to cover, you know, Kenny Stills one-on-one. Oh, yeah. So he locks down Kenny Stills. Then what do? You put two players over Jarvis Landry. Oh, crap, they got two guys. I can't throw it to Jarvis. Then what are you left with?
Devontae Parker or somebody like whatever. That, or the tight end to beat you.
So yeah. My point is that there are other ways to skin a cat besides just having your top corner following somebody else around. And an alternative way is a way that Bill Belichick, one of the best defensive minds in NFL history, employed when he added Darrelle Revis. So let's not make it out that that's the only way you can deploy your personnel for it to make sense, which I feel like a lot of people did this past week where, oh, the Redskins defensive coordinator has no clue what he's doing if he doesn't have Josh Norman follow the team's best wide receiver everywhere. It's nonsense. It's stupid.
Well, and they keep going back to the fact, okay, so if Norman's on the right, then if you're a quarterback, then you're going to throw left. If Norman's on the left, you're going to throw right. So what difference does it make what side you put Norman on when you need the opposite side to be defended well also?
And by the way, even if you had Norman on Antonio Brown, or this week they put Norman on Odell Beckham Jr., you're probably still going to give him safety help anyway. Why?
He should, at least.
He's playing the team's best wide receiver. And if you take a look at a story that I put up on Giants.com yesterday in my anatomy of the play, I looked at two Sterling Shepard catches from the game yesterday, and there was a play where the Saints were playing man-to-man defense, and they had a single high safety deep, and they played man across the board, and Roman Harper was the safety because Vaccaro at that point had left with the injury. And he was shaded. You had Odell Beckham on the left side of the field on the formation, and you had Shepard in the slot on one side with Cruz outside on the other. And when they lined up, where was Roman Harper? He was on the hash mark by Odell Beckham Jr. That was the play where Sterling Shepard ran his post-corner route. So he went to the middle of the field, cut it back outside. Roman Harper tried to get over, but guess what? He was too far on the other side of the field to make it because he was worried about Beckham. And that's how you try to move defensive with your eyes and your personnel. So you put Beckham on one side, it opens up the other side of the field for Shepard and Cruz, and the Giants had a 32-yard gain on that play there. Second longest catch of the day besides the Victor Cruz catch and fumble.
Well, and that's why, to me, D'Angelo Hall and David Bruden, the two safeties for the Redskins, are probably how they play are more important to watch than perhaps what Norman and Breland do. Case in point, let's go back to that Monday night game between the Redskins and the Steelers, John. The Antonio Brown touchdown, when he gets past Breland, well, yeah, he beat Breland, but where was the safety on
and
that
D'Angelo
play?
Hall was supposed to be there based on where he was lined up, but he got caught doing what? What does D'Angelo Hall like to do? Peek into the backfield and look at the quarterback.
So there you
go. He got burnt.
So at the end of the day, you still need safety help.
Yeah.
And people are blaming and ripping Breland left and right. Most guys on Antonio Brown are not going to win that battle.
No, they're not. There's a reason Antonio Brown is one of the top two wide receivers in football.
Yeah.
He's damn freaking good, and so is Beckham. And that's why when Beckham's there, he's going to get help over the top, too. When the Panthers had Josh Norman last year, they were one of the best defenses in football. What did they give Josh Norman? Help over the top when Odell Beckham was there. Why? Because Beckham was the best player on the team. And that's the smart thing to do. Anyway, that little aside is over. 201-939-4513. Dre in Atlanta, he's up next. Dre, how are you?
Hey, what's up, John? What's up, Lance? How's everything going?
What's up, Dre?
Doing well, Dre. What do you got for us?
Two things. I got two statements, and I got one question. The first statement is, hey, I understand who fumbled, but my biggest thing is I was just happy to see the acceleration and the cut. That was a good route he ran, and I was more impressed with that than the fumble. That's going to come.
Dre,
you know,
I agree 100%, and look, I was very honest, and I'll let you finish, Dre. You got plenty of time. When I watched Victor Cruz in the summer, he did not look like the same guy to me. I thought he was missing some of that explosion, and he wasn't getting a lot of separation, even in one-on-one drills in practice. That's changed. Now that he's in games, Dre, he's separating himself from these cornerbacks down the field, across the field. It looks like he has a lot of that explosiveness back in his step.
Okay, Now, I haven't seen the cuts as of yet. You know, the sharp sudden stops, I'm not worried about that. But just the fact that, you know, he was running past him, you know, and I was just watching. If he had just kept it, you know, kept it veer to the right, he might not. He would still probably been tackled, but he wouldn't have been hit so high, and he might have would have retained the ball. But regardless of that, situational awareness, you got to understand, you're back in the league, you're back on the field, somebody coming after you. You know, you're not running a 4-0 and nobody's going to catch you. So you still got to be aware of what's going on around you. Second, I was also happy with Darian Thompson. You know, we came into the season just hearing how good he is as a ball hawk and how he surveys the field like a center fielder. No one ever talked about him hitting. The way he hit Fleener on that 23-yarder, I mean, I could have swore he had whiplash. And I just like the fact that our free safeties hit like strong safeties, you know, because even the hit on Cook on the sideline, you know, even though Cook, you know, he's going to get hit, I don't think he knew he was going to get hit that hard.
Well, Dre, in fairness to us, you're not allowed to hit in the spring and the summer, so we didn't talk about it because we didn't see him do it.
True. But did anybody know he hit like Landon Collins?
What's that?
I said, but did anybody know he hit like Landon Collins?
No, because we didn't see him hit in practice because they're not allowed to.
I mean, there was a little bit of that on display at Boise State. Sure. I remember from watching him on film. But then again, you don't know if that's going to translate
college
over to the NFL.
Okay. And my last question, watching the Redskins, and are we going to jam Reed on the line since we have decent coverage? Or are we going to give him a free release like we did with Witten? And I take that answer off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate the phone.
I don't know, Dre. I have not been in the defensive strategy meeting with the coaches the last couple of days. I can't answer that.
But Jordan Reed is clearly going to be a key guy that they're going to have to hone in on because of the damage he's done against the Giants previously and how he's a big focal point of that offense.
Leads the team in catches, right? I mean,
I think he's up there.
Right,
he's up there in receiving yards and receptions, either one or two in both categories. Deshaun Jackson may be number one in receiving yards. I believe so.
Correct. Reed is number one in catches with 12, tied with Jamison Crowder. And Reed has 134 receiving yards as compared to Deshaun Jackson's 142. And Jordan Reed, as a tight end, 11.2 yards per catch. So it's not like they're dumping it off to Jordan Reed. They're throwing it to him down the seam. They're throwing it to him on slants, on posts, on little corners. So they use him all over the place.
Well, and I think what's opened things up is, remember, now there's also Vernon Davis. And Davis had five catches for over 50 yards the last game. So they'll have some double tight end formations, and they'll run both of them off the line of scrimmage, which means, you know, who's all of a sudden going to be the target on this play? That's why it's very difficult under those circumstances, going back to Dre's question about, you know, how many guys you jam at the line, because you have to be worried about a number of options that Washington's going to present here.
I don't want to spend too much time on the Redskins, but I do think it's interesting. They have a lot of weapons. You know, talk about Kirk Cousins and people complaining about how he's played so far this year. His numbers aren't bad either. He has the three picks, which hurt, but he's still completing 65% of his passes, and he has 693 yards in two games. That's not bad. The three picks kill you, but the yards and the completion percentage are actually pretty good. And when you talk about the weapons, Lance, 12 catches for Jordan Reed, 12 catches for Jamison Crowder, 9 catches for Deshaun Jackson, 8 catches for Pierre Garçon, 6 catches for Vernon Davis.
Spreading it around.
5 catches for Chris Thompson, a good receiver out of the backfield for them. And then you have 2 for the rookie Josh Doctson. So they will move the ball around, and the Giants' defense will have to be very sound across the field the same way they were against the Saints, because the Redskins have the same type of accumulation of weapons that the Saints do.
Yeah, because they use their running backs as receivers, as you mentioned. Yeah. They have depth at wide receiver. The tight end is a big focal point on offense. So a lot of similarities, even going back to the Cowboys too. Remember, John, Cowboys have the tight end. They have 3 wide receivers. They have a running back. One thing, though, and I know we don't want to get too crazy on the Redskins, but the one thing that jumped out to me when I was looking at the numbers and just looking at some of the highlights, Washington barely ran the football against the Dallas Cowboys, which I don't understand, considering they led in that game and the game was close. It's going to be very interesting to see whether or not they attempt to dictate the game on the ground, especially how good the Giants have been in terms of stopping the run, because you look at the numbers, they're averaging nearly 5 yards per carry, John. And Matt Jones has respectable numbers, too.
Yeah, 4.3 yards per carry.
But he only has 20 carries over the first 2 games. I just wonder if maybe they reevaluate and look to perhaps get the ground game going, because they have not stuck to the ground game in the first 2 contests.
Tough sled against the Giants, though. And it makes more sense against the Steelers. They got behind Pittsburgh in that
correct
game.
Correct.
So
but the Cowboys game,
they were right in it the whole time.
17 rushes in that
game.
Kirk Cousins threw the ball 46 times. Yep. Doesn't surprise you that he throws one interception after another under
these
circumstances.
We talked about this offseason, though. To me, the biggest question for the Redskins this year was going to be their running game. I did not trust Matt Jones. I did not understand why they let Alfred Morris walk away from that team. I thought he was still a good back, and I think we've seen that with Dallas now. He's still a good back. But, man, it is what it is, and we'll see if the Giants can shut down the run. Let's go to Jeff in Rhode Island on line one. He's been holding the longest. Jeff, how are you? Marco, we lost you in Connecticut. You can give us a call back. We'll get you back up. Jeff, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
How are you, Jeff?
When I called last Friday, I said that after this New Orleans game, we'd have a better idea of what our defense was. So, so far, so good.
Yeah, I'd say.
And I'll say hats off to Coach Spags, because it just goes to show you, when you got the horses, you can pull the plow.
No, look, okay, Jeff, absolutely. And we got some calls last year, well, you know, maybe Spags isn't a good defensive coordinator anymore. Maybe the game has passed him by. Well, lo and behold, when you get the coach guys like Olivier Vernon, Snacks Harrison, JPP when he's healthy, Janoris Jenkins, and you get veteran linebackers that know what they're doing, you know what? You're going to look like a much better defensive coordinator. It's really pretty simple.
Well, he's very good. I don't think there's anybody better than him. And the only complaint, and it's a minor one, is the sacks. But who cares when you give up only two touchdowns in two games? You can't complain about anything. In regards to the offense, well, you know, we took 21 points off the board. We only scored 16 points and coughed the ball up three times. That happens, you're not going to win another game this year. So
yeah,
all those things can be corrected. The guys are there. They're getting open to make the plays. So the important thing is securing the ball.
Yeah, I think that's
what it's all about.
Yeah, Jeff, I saw a stat. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was the first time in NFL history a team had given up 350 yards of offense, turned it over three times, and didn't score an offensive touchdown but still won the game or something like
say,
that.
They should be in rare
company. It was some type of crazy number like that. Yeah. Like, it was like the first time in NFL history that happened.
It's very
one,
rare.
One other thing is Ralph Facchiano correctly pointed out, if Cruz didn't make that catch at the end of the game, we would have had to kick the 54-yard field goal, and the Saints would have got the ball back with a minute 32 to play. That could have been a disaster.
Well, you know what? So, you say that. I mean, do you know for a fact the Giants would have tried to kick the field goal there?
Well, it would have been 4th and 8.
I was about to look up
Cruz converted on 3rd and 8. If it's a 4th and 8,
there.
I think they're going to go for the field goal.
Yeah, you
got to
kick it.
Those circumstances.
You got to kick it. Absolutely right. I agree.
Yeah. Well, in any event, we're 2-0, and all of us would have signed up for that. So we're going to have a stiff test, another stiff test for the defense Sunday. So all I can say is let's go Giants, okay?
Appreciate
Jeff.
Jeff.
Appreciate the phone call. Stiff test pretty much every week. I mean, you got the Vikings and the Packers following, so there's going to be definitely a challenge.
Talk about defenses. How good does that Viking defense look?
One of the tops. I mean, they shut down Aaron Rodgers and company.
Dude.
Yeah.
I believe Pro Football Focus said, by their grading, that might have been the worst game of Aaron Rodgers' career.
He was terrible with the blitz in his face. I was looking over the numbers earlier today. Struggled immensely on every down in which Minnesota got some pressure or a quarterback hit. Struggled, and he even had an interception under the blitz, too.
He fumbled 3 times, I think, or something like that?
Well, there was one fumble where he didn't even seem to make ball security a priority. I mean,
yeah,
he was spinning around, and he was handing the ball out. It was like, here, just take it. You know, I mean, it was almost like a ballerina-esque type of move. But to get back to your point, the Vikings' defense has looked very impressive over the first two games. So that means points may be very rare in that contest, especially when you take into consideration how both of these defenses are playing.
And they said that building was so loud that the Vikings offense was getting annoyed because they couldn't hear their quarterback's calls. Because the fans were so loud even when the Vikings had the ball. So that's going to be a challenge for the Giants offense trying to get that together. All right, let's go to our next question on the Giants mobile app. If you're watching or listening that way, if you're not, you can download the Giants mobile app at your Apple iTunes App Store, or Google Play Store, you name it, it's there. And the last question of the show, go there and vote right now. Who is more important to slow down for the Giants this week? We gave you two choices because these are the two guys I thought were the most dangerous, Jordan Reed or everyone's favorite former Philadelphia Eagle, DeSean Jackson.
Well, Jackson's had big games against the Giants, as you just alluded to.
Is there a player in the league that Giant fans dislike more than DeSean Jackson?
I think he'd probably
he's
take
right
the cake.
Up there.
I think he'd be right up there.
I mean,
there.
Dez has got to be up there, right?
But Dez doesn't have nearly as much history as DeSean Jackson does. So that's why you'd have to give DeSean Jackson. Yeah. You know who else would get the edge?
LeSean McCoy.
But he's no longer in the division.
Right.
He'd be the other one. McCoy and DeSean Jackson, I think, would be the two players that probably have given the Giants the most headaches over their tenures within the division.
Jason Witten's a good one.
But I think Giant fans
respect Jason Witten. And he doesn't, you know, like rub it. You know, when DeSean Jackson scores, he lets you know it.
Witten does it in a
quiet
fashion.
Yeah, Jason Witten does it in a quiet fashion, and he kind of plays it the right way, while DeSean Jackson, his history is well documented. I don't need to get into it, but.
No, that's fair. In terms of how he comes off, his personality and so forth.
But in terms of effectiveness, if there's the two guys probably that have been in the league the longest that have hurt the Giants the most, I think Jackson, Witten's a really good one, Matt. And I think LeSean McCoy, like you said, will be the third.
Yeah, there's really no other Washington Redskin, because Jackson did more of his damage with the Eagles,
Pierre Garçon
hasn't had monster games. You know, actually, who had well,
Alfred Morris,
I was going to say.
Not bad.
Not consistently, but no. there were a few games.
Well, the problem is that
well.
You got to pick out those guys that had those big game-winning plays. And then that's really where the animus comes from. You know, whether it's Witten, the game-winning touchdown last year. We know about the Sean Jackson
return,
punt return.
Yes. And McCoy's had some big runs against the
Absolutely.
Giants, too,
so,
for touchdowns.
You know, if you guys are on the line, we'll take some more calls, obviously, the rest of the way. If you guys want to give us your biggest Giants villain. You know what? I think we should save that topic for
that is a good topic.
For an off-season show.
Absolutely.
Biggest
you could have an
Giants
entire discussion
villain.
On that.
I think that could be a lot of fun.
Or biggest Giants villain in the division and outside of the division, too. Maybe somebody who, even if they play the team every 4 years, they always seem to put up a big game.
Drew Brees would be on that list for outside the division.
He's put up the numbers. I mean, he was 5-1 against the Giants with the Saints and the Chargers combined before losing. And he had very good numbers.
Then it was 4-2.
No, he was 5-1.
5-1?
Yeah, he's now 5-2.
Okay.
His record against the Giants.
939-4513. Chuckles in Portland, Maine. How you doing, Charlie?
Speaking of villains...
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Big Blue Kickoff's biggest villain.
Yes.
Charlie in Portland, Maine.
Hey, look.
Oh, by the way, Charlie. Charlie, real quick. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I thought about you the other day, and it was hilarious. So there's a dog in my building that apparently, like, injured its leg or something like that. So I was talking to the owner, and they're like,
you know what?
We've just been rubbing Arnica on her for a week, and the dog's ankle was better. And I thought of you, Charlie.
You can't screw that any better.
No, you can't.
Arnica on the dog.
Yes,
now.
He was recommending
it for NFL players, though.
Correct.
So look at this. It's a versatile product.
Very
who knew that?
Versatile.
Wow.
Hey, look. I am. I hope they really take their time with Newhouse, because I want him when he comes back to be 110%. So I hope, like, you know, because he's so important to our offensive line, they give him 6 to 8 weeks to really heal.
Charlie,
really
the sarcasm
strong.
Coming through your mouth is overwhelming. See, I'm pretty good at sarcasm radar because I love it myself.
Yeah, me too.
You cannot pull a fast one
I could fill this water bottle
with the sarcasm dripping off your voice.
And
you know what? I give you credit because his tone,
it was very good.
He was working on it.
It was very good.
I mean, your craft, you're honing it. But I'm sorry, the execution was not necessarily going over my head. On this one.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
I knew I wouldn't get it by you.
Okay. All right.
The good thing is that Will Beatty will be our right tackle.
Are you sure about that?
I wouldn't make that assumption,
positive.
Charlie.
I am positive. Look, Hart is listed as the backup guard. Beatty is listed as the backup tackle.
Yeah, but you realize that Will Beatty, though, wasn't active the last two games, and Bobby Hart was the first guard off the first tackle off the bench.
Yeah, he was the only one there. Who are you going to put in? Jones?
Yeah, but my point, though, Troy, if Beatty was ready to play, don't you think Beatty would have been active?
I think
Bobby Rainey didn't do
play.
Anything.
They just haven't activated him yet, but this week they will.
Okay,
and
we'll see. You might
be
right.
Our right tackle. And I got a couple other things.
Yeah.
I'll make them quick.
Well, Charlie, one other thing that I want to throw out on that topic, and then I'll let you continue, is remember, Bobby Hart alternated reps with Newhouse during the course of camp at tackle.
Correct.
So even though he's listed as the backup guard, that doesn't mean that they haven't worked him in at that right tackle spot throughout the season.
And in fact, he's gotten more snaps at tackle in practice than he has gotten at guard. All right, Charlie, what else you got for us?
Yeah, well, the reason why they did that is because he couldn't beat out Newhouse, so they turned him into a guard. So anyway,
okay.
You don't have to
He's
get
got
into
an
that.
Answer for everything.
But,
always.
And the thing is, I don't understand. I had a problem with Odell. He had a post presser, after the game, and the first question some reporter asked him was about, you know, the drop pass in the end zone, and he wouldn't answer it. He just said, we won the game. And to me, it's like it showed a little lack of maturity on his part, because I really felt that he should have owned it. He should have said, yeah, I made mistakes in this game. Our defense picked me up. Victor Cruz picked me up. Other players picked me up. I should have never dropped those balls and just moved on and just, you know, taking it to heart and saying, yeah, I made a mistake. But instead, he totally ignored it, and he didn't want to talk about it. So to me, that's a little lack of maturity. You know, Eli, you know, whenever he makes a mistake, he says, yeah, I shouldn't have thrown that pass. That was on me. You know, he's always, you know, saying when he's making a mistake. And I just don't understand why he couldn't do that. That's just a question. I don't know if you guys, you know, thought of that did you guys see that when he was talking about that?
Oh, yeah, honestly, I was down there when he did it. I was actually right next to him when he was asked those questions, and he gave similar answers to me, to be quite honest with you, when I followed up a couple questions with him on even just generally the offense in terms of how they didn't really put up any points in that game against the Saints. And you know, he gave me the same type of answer. Look, I'm not going to judge the way the guy answers questions, Charlie. I understand why you would take it the way you did. I get that. I don't think there's any harm in a player saying, look, it's a ball I should have caught. Thank goodness we won the game, and that's what matters the most. But he didn't, and you know what? I don't think it really matters. It'll be more interesting to see how he handles the whole, you know, because you know the first 10 questions he's getting on Wednesday, when the media here is all going to be Josh Norman, Josh Norman, Josh Norman,
right.
Josh Norman, Josh
right.
Norman, Josh
right.
Norman. I'm curious to see how he answers those questions. I think he will handle it well, and I think having Victor Cruz here and playing will help him too, having a veteran wide receiver there to kind of be the leader on that subject too.
Somebody to balance off of and so forth.
Yes.
And Charlie, I think you bring up a fair point. I don't think it's a stretch for, you know, where you're coming from and how you read into that. And I mean, that's the nature of the court of public opinion versus how the player is expressive. I think the one thing that you could take away is I guarantee you, because of the way he answered the questions, it's still eating at him to this moment.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
If there's anything based on his track record is, he's fairly good at bouncing back, because even in that Panthers game, remember, he gets the late touchdown on Josh Norman after everything went crazy in that contest. So that to me is more important. What he does on the field and bounces back, how he does that against the Redskins, much more important than how he answers questions. But with that being said, I do think that you brought up a very fair point in terms of maybe how the fans view how he answers some of those questions. I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah. And I just got two other things. One thing is, why are we using Vereen as our third and one, fourth and two running back?
I think, Charlie, real quick. Yeah. I think that had to do with Rashad Jennings' injury there, to be honest with you. I think Jennings would have been in the game.
Dockler is the toughest runner to me. He's always running tough, and he runs tough up the middle. To me, that's your third, fourth down back. I don't understand why he wasn't used. And one other thing is, When are we going to see a screen pass? You know, when are we going to see a screen pass? I don't understand why McAdoo doesn't use screen passes.
Vereen had a nice middle screen against Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. When two offensive linemen get out in front of him, he ran up the middle. I think he got about 12 or 13 yards. They haven't run a tight end screen yet. I haven't seen a wide receiver bubble screen yet, I don't think. You're right. We haven't seen a ton of screens yet, Charlie. I think that's a fair point. All right, thanks.
I was just going to say, if BD's our right tackle, I think we're going to see some screen passes.
All right, Charlie.
That boy can move.
Thank you, pal.
All right, Charlie.
Appreciate it.
All right,
I got
three calls on the line. We'll get to all of you before the show is over. We got 7 minutes. Let's get to it. Big Ed in Maryland. I can only imagine. Big Ed was happy when the team was bad last year. How happy is he at 2-0?
Oh, he's been on cloud 9.
What's going on, Big Ed?
What's up, John? What's up, Lance? This is the original of all time. This is your favorite Big Ed from Maryland, of course.
I was going to say, it does sound like that. Are you doing a Howard Cosell impression, Big Ed? Is that what I'm hearing?
Of course, John. Don't you worry your pretty little head up. Exactly just that. Oh, so in the case you haven't heard and understood, our most villainous person of all time is DeSean Jackson. This guy has caused more havoc and teardrop cries than I've ever seen in all Giants history. He's one, Herm Edwards is another, and then that other guy we won't even mention. But that doesn't matter. What we want to worry about on Sunday is very simple. Attack Kirk Cousins. He's the key. The key to our game is so simple. We need about 8-9 sacks on him.
Have him by halftime.
Wow. Look, by halftime, he's hiding under the bench and don't want to go back in the game no more. Because he keeps getting sacked. Every time he looks up, he sees JPP either to his left or he sees Vernon coming to his right. And what he don't see is what I like what we did. And the same, you guys are right, John. You just said it a moment ago. The same defense on Drew Brees, same defense on this defense coming. Same thing. You have to because they got all the weapons too. You're right. You said it. You just said everything I was going to say. So I love that. Right on point with all of it. That's it. That's the key to our game. We're that way. Oh, and that's the best part about the next game. What we didn't do in the Saints game, we will do in the Redskins game. We don't have to worry about it. We're going to score a lot of points on offense this game because the Redskins' defense is suspect. You can take Josh Norman out. He's only one player.
And they play
very
well.
They have 10 others. We got to go at them.
All right, Big Ed. Thank you, my friend.
Yes.
A pleasure as always, buddy.
I'm going to go now. I'm going to go because y'all got two more calls for me.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
See y'all this weekend, man.
All right, Big Ed.
Big game. We're going to have fun. We're going to win. You're on 3-0 into October. It's going to be straight.
All right, Big Ed. Thank you, man.
All right, Big Ed.
It's a big game for Big Ed, because he's in that D.C. area. He doesn't want to hear from the Redskins.
Co-workers
fans.
When you return on Monday.
Yeah. I'm waiting. Where's the Stephen Washington, D.C. call?
We have a lot, I say, from Maryland and D.C.
Yeah,
in that area.
Shakes has been in the
yeah.
witness protection program here.
He's been in hiding. Yeah. It's true. We haven't heard from the D.C. Maryland conglomerate, as I like to call it.
We have not.
No, we have to have them represent a little bit more as opposed to social media. I know they're all active on social media, but Big Ed is doing all the heavy lifting.
You had Len yesterday, right?
Len, yes. Len, correct. Len deserves credit, too, for that.
We're not asking for Ann to call, though. We're not. I just want to make that very clear.
We're not calling everyone out of hibernation.
We're not asking for that.
There's a distinct difference. We're only calling a few people out of hibernation, not everybody,
that's
okay?
That's correct.
You know? Hopefully there's enough food for certain people to stay in hibernation.
All right, let's go to Mark in Chicago. He's next to last. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm coming in for the Redskins game
on Sunday.
Great. So where are you guys set up? I'd like to come by and say hi.
Yeah, we'll be down at MetLife Central. If you come between 11:30 and 12:30, I'll be down there between 11:30 and noon. Lance will be down there for the entire time. You can say hello. So by the MetLife gate at MetLife Stadium.
All right, I'll be there.
Great.
Hey, have we established who's doing the play calling yet? Those last three calls were really aggressive. Whoever did it has some big cojones. That third and one pass and those two routes down the sideline, the Cruz and Beckham, I mean, they were very aggressive. Who's doing that?
That would be Ben McAdoo.
Is he?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I have a question about strategy. As it worked out, you know, Cruz getting tackled – set up the kneel downs and everything. Would you ever think that somebody on a route like that would run out of bounds on purpose just to, you know, so they could control the clock and not give the ball back to the opposition? I mean, athletes, you know, instinct is to score. But would they ever do that from a strategic standpoint?
I got to be honest with you. I can't imagine a receiver catching a deep ball like that. You're probably not in your head at that point calculating how much time is left. My thought is that most players, including Victor Cruz, if he could have, would have scored a touchdown there. That takes a lot of forethought to go down in bounds there to keep the clock running. I mean, it worked out. It worked out perfectly, actually. But I think asking a player to think that far ahead in that situation might be asking a lot.
Yeah, I would think that the instinct would be to take your also momentum into the end zone under those circumstances, too. And you know what? A lot can go wrong. You never know what could happen if you don't get into the end zone, Mark. You know, miss field goal, bad snap. I'd rather take the points under those circumstances.
And I will say this, excellent clock management end of the game with those three kneel downs and having the last play be that field goal. I thought it was an excellent job by Ben McAdoo and his time management team that he has put together for the season.
You play for the winner, you play for overtime under those circumstances.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Well, hold on a second. Right, I got a couple other things.
You got to be real quick, Mark. It's a 12:58. I got one more caller I got to get to.
when are we going to stop throwing the Larry Donnell in the corner and in the flat? The guy cannot move his feet and his hands at the same time. Throw him seam routes, throw him going across the middle. But, you know, I was at the 49ers game 2 years ago, and the guy cannot catch a pass in the end zone.
Well, he caught that game winner, though,
in the corner of the end zone when he has to twist and turn and coordinate. And he's athletic, but he's not coordinated.
Well, Mark, I was going to say it's comical that you brought up that game of all games because he caught the game-winning touchdown in that contest.
No, this was 2 years ago.
Oh,
when
2 years.
He
okay. I'm sorry.
Interception.
Stand corrected. I thought you were referring to last year's matchup. Gotcha. You know, at the end of the day, he's one of the tallest targets on the team, and that's why they like to utilize him in that position. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, Mark. With his frame and with the people that usually match up with him, you figure if you're going to throw it up, Donnell should go up and get it. I mean, that's part of the rationale as to why he's attractive in running those types of plays.
Last comment, Mark. Get to it real fast.
Just one other thing. One reason why we can't run block, we have our two tackles and two-point stances. If you go back and look at the New Orleans line, they had two of their guys, at least two of their guys, in four-point stances, staying low and just blowing up the blocking schemes. And that's all I'll say.
Appreciate
so thanks, guys.
It.
I'll see you on Sunday.
Great. Right, look forward to meeting you, Mark. Come by MetLife Central. Sean in California. Let's wrap this sucker up to the West Coast. What's up, Sean?
Hey, guys. I'll make it fast.
Thank you.
Salutes to our defense. Our defense putting in the work this year. Mad respect for the Saints defense for not letting up our offensive touchdown.
Yeah.
We couldn't score on them. Hope P.J. Williams is doing okay. I know he got hit pretty hard in that game. I want to say something real fast. So I'm looking at our receiver stats. We got Odell Beckham Jr. for 12 catches, 159 yards. One catch for over 20-plus yards with an average of 13.3. We got Sterling Shepard right in behind him with 11 catches, 160 yards. Three catches, 20-plus yards a mer with 14.5. And we got Victor Cruz sitting at 8 receptions, 125 yards. And also three receptions, 20-plus yards a mer. My question to you guys today is, will we see that majority throughout the season, or will Odell Beckham kind of come out and, you know, and jump ahead of the pack? Because if we see it like this, I kind of like where all of our receivers are close, because it kind of gives a – we kind of, if you look at it, I mean, like, they're joking on NFL Network saying that Victor Cruz left as Batman and came back as Robin. But if you look at it this way, that was a Batman move he pulled in the final quarter. And I believe this is like three number one receivers on one team. And I think if they work together and not really have Odell Beckham or Victor jumping ahead of the pack, I think this is a threat for later on in the season. And I'll take you guys' call off air. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Sean. I think it's a good thing. I mean, hell, you don't want to have to throw Beckham the ball 200 times in a season. You want to be able to spread it around. And I'll use your comic book metaphor. I don't think this is a Batman-Robin situation. I think this is a Justice League situation where you got a bunch of guys that can all contribute. You know, you got Batman, you got Superman, you got Green Lantern in the mix.
There you go.
You know, maybe you can have like Roger Lewis be Aquaman off the bench.
Aquaman in the mix, yeah.
Absolutely. So I think you got a lot of
Deadpool
guys that can
too.
Contribute.
Can Deadpool join the clan, or that's a little risque?
Deadpool's Marvel.
Well, all right, but you know, come on, you get the point.
That's the X-Men.
Oh, please, you and your analogies.
You got to stick with the Justice League. You got Wonder Woman,
again.
Batman,
I knew you,
Superman,
I knew you were
going
to say we have to be politically correct.
Politically correct? I'm
the whole point
the
was a variety
separate.
Of that's superheroes.
Well,
you understood.
If you wanted to go that way, you could have went with the Avengers, too. You have Iron Man,
okay,
you have Captain America,
you
if you want to go in that
I'm
direction.
I'm all for everybody.
But he mentioned Batman and Robin, so I wanted to stick
you
in
the
DC universe.
I understand. Okay. Yes. I think it's a good thing,
yeah.
too. And to answer his other part of the question, Eli Manning takes what the defense gives him. And if they're going to give a lot more attention to Beckham this year, then if Cruz and Shepard have one-on-one favorable matchups, Manning's going to go to that side of the field. So if they balance out the numbers, I don't think that's a bad thing. And I'm expecting this to continue. I'd be very surprised if this is going to be a season like in previous seasons where Beckham's numbers are extremely lopsided compared to the rest of the pack.
I will say this, though, and I think a lot of teams have been guarding the Giants, and especially Beckham, to not give up the big play. The Cowboys did it. We saw the Saints do it, too. A lot of off coverage and things like
giving
that.
Giving space to maneuver.
And I think we're going to keep seeing that until you hurt the team on the other side of the field. So as Cruz and Shepard make more of these big plays down the field, and who would have thought both Shepard and Cruz would have a higher yards per catch than Odell Beckham Jr. at this point of the year? No one would have predicted that. But as those guys make more and more big plays, guess what? The safeties are going to start sliding back towards the middle of the field and away from Beckham, and then that'll open up some big plays for Odell because they can't keep that safety over the top on him. So Everything is a symbiotic
game of chess. It's going to vary from game to game. But right now, Cruz and Shepard are getting more one-on-one matchups as opposed to what Beckham is seeing. That's been the trend in the first two, at least.
Lance, good times.
Sounds good.
For Lens Mental, I'm John Schmoke. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Everybody, tomorrow it's Anita Marks and David Deal.
David Deal, yes.
Right here. I almost said Howard Cross. He's with the Tino on Thursday. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a fantastic day. Player availabilities at 3:45. Go to Giants.com when those get posted. See you then.
Have a good one.